Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome again to Scream Queen, a podcast about scary movies.
From people not typically depicted in scary movies.
How you doing, Drea? How's the bullshit?
You know, bullshit's bullshit. I'm hanging in there, baby. How are you?
I'm good. You know what? California, we now have, like, what, the most cases of coronavirus? We're number one. Did you see that? Did you see what we just won? Man, fuck this place.
Fuck everybody. Oh, my God. If you don't wear a mask and you listen to our podcast, can I be as bold as to say, don't listen to us?
I wonder if anyone's making scary movie masks.
We're already on top of that, bitch.
Okay.
It's in the doc. I said, merch, scary movie masks.
Okay. Yeah. Ooh, that's such a good idea. Okay.
Great minds. We believe in you guys, and we hope that you're safe. But I really feel for those of you with ignorant ass relatives who don't want to wear masks and spread the COVID and all that bullshit.
How did we politicize masks? I mean, this is just some like 2016 like Russian bot bullshit. I bet you it's like some Russian bots who just met some gullible white people online and were like and did that shit.
I believe that. I think that the people are fucking stupid, and it didn't take much to get people to this point. This is all a problem with people in authority. They don't like being told what to do. That's all this is. And I'm like, so you're just a fucking child then. If you don't want to put a mask on?
Can you just not be a fucking asshole? Can you just not be a fucking asshole? Because this isn't necessarily about your safety. It's about keeping other people safe. That's what the mask is doing. It's keeping people safe from you.
People are dying.
I mean, like, my dad went to the hospital with, like, shortness of breath and coughing. And I was, like, because, like, he has diabetes and heart disease. I mean, he's a native man, so, of course, he has diabetes. But he also has heart disease and, gallbladder shit. And I was just, like, if he gets it, he's a goner. And I was so scared. And thankfully, it was just his bum heart. But, like, seriously, like, I know, like, so many of my New York friends had it. And it was, like, it wrecked them. Like, my friend Sarah in Austin, she was, like, she was sick 4 days before Father's Day, and then for 2 or 3 weeks after that, and when I talked to her on the phone, she still had a cough, and she was like, I feel like I went on some fucking, like, peyote bullshit, like, that it was, like, the experience was just so surreal, and that one day she would feel better, and one day it would be twice as bad, and I was like, mm. And she was like, yeah. Tommy, do not get this if you have any choice whatsoever, and I was like, you know what? But I was never really at the house, so I think I'm gonna be fine. What have you been? Let's steer it a little bit from Corona. What are you watching this week? What are you looking at? What are you listening to? What's going on in the pop culture Dreaverse?
I got onto HBO Max. I've been watching some of their shit. First of all, they got Space Ghost Coast to Coast, but that's for another topic. That's one of my favorites. But I started watching the ballroom show, Legendary, and you know it's got its highs and lows in it. But there are some really amazing routines that they put together. Like there's a full on, they do a carnival ballroom scene. So everybody has their own takes on what it is to go to the carnival. So it's a full on like Attack of the Clowns one where it's like
It and all these like killer clowns like running around stage and voguing, and it's really fucking amazing. And yeah, they go all out, and they have a pretty high like budget, so they get to go all out with production.
Okay.
It's yeah, and then the judges, they have Laomi, she's like a legendary in the in the scene, and then they bring in I'm trying to think. Oh, Megan Thee Stallion is one of the stay judges, and then,
amazing, amazing.
Yeah. And then Law Roach, and he's like Zendaya's manager, and mm-hmm. he's a bitch. But anyway, he kind of fits into the scene. And then the other judge, they interchange the last judge. They had special guests, and some of those special guests are like, "Why is this person here? Like, who? How, what do you? What is your connection to the scene?" But anyway. Mm. That was one thing. And then the other thing I watched the new Dave Franco directorial debut called The Rental.
That looks scary as fuck.
It was good. It was really good. And I was like, it was scary. You probably won't want to watch it because it's like, but I mean, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. But it's about, it's like nightmare Airbnbs, basically.
As long as it's not about a fucking disease, goddammit.
There's nothing gross in it. Listen, you complain about diseases, but you're the same nasty bitch that watched The Disease and then went and got food after it. So
they looked like wontons, and I got hungry. I didn't. I swear, no, I didn't get wontons. I got gyoza. They look like
gyoza. Yeah,
I'm gonna get some gyoza. But I had the good sense to turn that revulsion into hunger. You know what I mean? I'm making it work for me. I didn't stay disgusted, even though that shit was gross. And fuck you for making me watch it.
Make you get over it. Just do one of these. Just do one of them. That's all you had to do.
I'm in this writer's room, and one of the people I saw The Lodge with, she's a good friend of mine, Tazla, and she was like, and one of the episodes we were potentially going to do was like a Halloween horror episode, and they nominated me to write it because of this show, and we were talking through it, and Tazla was like, bitch, how can you watch a scary movie? You don't actually watch them. I saw you. You have your hat, your hoodie, a shirt, your hands, your fingers, your arms, your legs.
I have photographic evidence of this shit.
I haven't seen it. I think that's been falsified.
You know about that shit. I got you. You have
fake news.
If you forgot about it, I can resend it. No problem.
I'm good. I'm good. Actually, good. I was watching Twilight Zone, watching that new Twilight Zone.
Yeah, I wasn't feeling it.
You know, the thing is, this is the thing always with me in Twilight Zone, which is like, I love the premise. There's always like some weird shit where I'm like, how the fuck did you think about this? Like, this writer's room has like, that imagination is lit. And then it just fucking disappoints. Except, did you see the one with Topher Grace?
I didn't watch I'm like a few episodes left. So I don't think I saw his. I got up to, I know I saw the Billy Porter one. I don't even really remember. I saw the Journey Smollett one and the Billy Porter one. I saw the one at the beginning where the homegirl set up dude to like come to rescue her. Remember that one?
Oh, that was good. Bullshit. I was like,
bitch. That was good. I liked that one. And I was just getting into the Christopher Maloney one. And then me and my mom were like, what the fuck's going on? And we were like, we need to come back to this. And that's where we stopped.
The Topher Grace one is very, very satisfying.
Okay. I'm gonna get back to it then. I'll finish it.
But it's hard for me to watch it because, one of the reasons that it's kind of gets a little ridiculous is because Jordan Peele is like the Rod Sterling. And so he comes out and he's like, in a world where da-da-da-da. And it just, he looks like he's a character on his sketch show. Mm-hmm. So it's hard for me to take it seriously. Because that doesn't necessarily happen all the time, but for some reason in the Twilight Zone, because he's so clearly playing a character that like, I'm just waiting for him to like make a fart joke or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Did you finish it?
I did. Yeah.
Okay.
The Topher Grace was the season finale, I believe.
Okay.
Or second to last. Anyway, it's one of the last episodes and it's good.
Yeah. I have been watching like old episodes of Twilight Zone, and those are really fun.
Classic shit.
Yeah, and those are really creative. Like I've been kind of blown away by it. They had like very topical shit. You know, like if they had an episode about like if the Civil War went the other way, you know, like how like this world would be, and Rod Sterling was you know, he was pretty progressive. I'm kind of shocked.
And what's his name from Star Trek, who played Sulu? He was on one of them. And I feel like it was George about Chikai. World War II and like maybe even Japanese internment or something like that.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's the thing. I don't know that episode, but I am familiar with it. You're talking about George Takei?
Yeah.
You want to tell the people what we're getting into today?
Today, where our main discussion is on the Relic. That not came out this year.
Mixed up with The Relic, which is another stupid-ass movie.
That's just fucking terrifying, because it's about getting old. And our scream queen this week is... Oh, I forgot what her real name
Angelica
was.
Angelica Ross.
Our screen queen this week is Angelica Ross as Donna Chambers in American Horror Story 1984.
All right, let's get into it. So, this movie, it's directed by Natalie Erica James. She's of Japanese and Australian descent, which I thought was, you know, interesting. And I'm always down to, you know, support women and, you know, women coming from just a different background. This is her debut film, and it stars Emily Mortimer, Robin Nevin, and Bella Heathcote. So it says, when Kay's mother vanishes only to mysteriously reappear, not at all herself, she begins to sense that an insidious presence in the house might be taking control. This movie set in Australia. Emily Mortimer is the shit. We try to focus on a lot of, like, you know, the handle of the show is, you know, we try to focus on people of color and whatnot, but we also just like to focus on good content. And this movie definitely, you know, it's women centric and it's a good movie. And I love haunted house shit.
Yeah.
How are you feeling about it?
Motherhood and daughterhood and generational, the passing of really like care from one generation to the next, you know, like when you're suddenly tasked with, as an adult, caring for your adult parent in the way that they had to care for you. That was one of the themes that I saw throughout. You know, possession movies aren't my favorite. Scary house shit, that's not necessarily my favorite, but this was actually excellent. And it didn't matter, because like, I think what I don't like about those like slow, more atmospheric films, like, is they end up being like The Turning, which is just shitty, and it didn't really say anything, but it like relies on jump scares.
Which one was The Turning?
The Turning was the one in the... Oh God,
what's it? That horrible movie with the kids?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. We saw that together, did we?
Yeah, and it just ends, and there's no resolution.
It meant nothing, that movie.
No. But like, when really, like, The Turning of The Screw is about, like, is this... haunted, or is this person like have some kind of mental disorder, you know? So it's like, it doesn't even get into the subtext of that. It just like goes right for the jump scares. And this one doesn't actually have too many like scares.
No, there's a running line throughout the film, and it's a consistent dread, and you feel it from the very beginning. And that tone, they keep that tone, and it's really important to the film. That's the scary thing about it. It's just, it feels suffocating to a degree, and not in a bad way. It's just really effective the way, and especially once they're breaking into that other side of the house, you know, like there's this other, it's really confusing how they did that layup. But when the daughter gets stuck,
I had to watch it twice, because I was like, well, because it's also like a very, that third act is just very dark.
Yeah.
I mean, not in terms of like necessarily tone, but like literally, yeah, like it's all at night. And
yeah, it's like flashlights and shit. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I had to actually wait until night to watch it, because in the daylight, it washed out too much on my screen. And so I was like, Where is she? How did she get, is she in the walls? What's happening? What's going on here?
I rewatched it this afternoon, and I watched it in a similar way. I couldn't even see half of it, but I had already seen it. So I was just like, whatever. But I was too lazy to shut my blinds.
I was too lazy to either shut my blinds or increase the brightness of my screen. So I was like, I'm not going to watch it today. I'm not going to watch it tonight. What really scared me too was this idea. Well, it's like the subtext is dementia, right? At a certain point, she says, that's not Gran anymore. That's not her anymore. That's not mom anymore. And it's like, because this, like, the subtext of somebody getting older and not having the same mental faculties as when they were younger. And like, that's terrifying. And then also what getting older does to your body is terrifying. And like what getting older means when you can no longer take care of yourself is terrifying. And the fact that this woman, this older lady is an artist and her arthritis is inhibiting her from expressing her art, that's terrifying. It reminds me of like when Mary Wells fucking lost her voice. And it's like, what do you do as a singer if that is your passion and your life, to lose the thing that you think makes you special or that makes you feel whole in the world, you know? And I also like the fact, because like, you know, we don't really know what's happening. Like we see, you know, at first it's just so traditionally like she, like at one point she gives the granddaughter her wedding ring and then sees it on her later and then doesn't remember giving it to her and takes her back and like slaps her. And so it's just like a volatile person who does not, who's losing their memory, you know, who has dementia. And, but then like, it starts to get creepy. Like she's got some kind of a rot on her chest that nobody else sees.
A bruise that keeps growing. Yeah. It's, and then, oh God, you know, what it leads to when her, that scene where she's stabbing herself in the fucking chest is, that's really gnarly.
And then when she, her leg breaks, that was really the only gross thing, really. That was like the only, like in a traditional sort of horror movie when like somebody leg break open or whatever, like they get stabbed or something like that. Like
there were like, it wasn't gross. I mean, okay, gross in like, it wasn't like puke nasty gross, but it was violent. It was very violent.
I like this term, puke nasty.
Puke nasty. It was like, through dementia, one thing that happens is, you know, people can like act very volatile. And so, you know, like, so when she takes back her ring and she bites her daughter and, you know, attacks her granddaughter. And so she's forgetting who she is. She doesn't trust her surroundings anymore. Nothing is familiar to her, but it's more than just dementia. It's like it's symbolic to just like how their lives are. Something's out of place. Something is not, has been out of place. And the mother and daughter, like all three generations of women, there's something really contentious there. Except, I mean, the daughter is the youngest, Sam, she's, something's charming. I kind of like her. She's kind of charming, but she's also really fucking annoying at the same time because she doesn't support her mother. You know, her mother's like, just all she has to do is just fall in line with her mom. You know, like you don't understand. This is not the same person. Like I don't recognize her. You know,
and also that it's like it's if she's wandering away for 3 days and doesn't remember where she is, it's actually putting her in. It's putting her in danger to keep her in that situation. Mm-hmm. But like
all common sense shit, you know,
with the daughter, with the youngest one, Sam, there's also this like something has happened in her professional life where she's like, is not, she's working at a bar and her mom was like, oh, just a bar. Cause like she was at university or something. She had some other kind of
gallery or something.
Yeah. Yeah. She had some other kind of career path and it seems like has given up on that. And I think, you know, in the way that this is about, you know, rearing and motherhood and parenthood, you know, I feel like subtextually, like what Emily Mortimer is feeling is like, I have done so much so that you could have the opportunity to have this professional experience. And in her mind, I think she's like, you've just thrown this away.
Yeah. I mean, typical, and not in every family, but that is a very typical thing. You know, their parents want their children to be better than they are. You know, they want them to achieve. And if you're a good parent, that's what you hope for your child. And but sometimes you can put the pressure on them and make them resent you, you know, because at the end of the day, it's like it's their journey and they have to figure out what's right for them. And clearly they don't talk because they don't know how to talk to each other.
Well,
and,
like the mom, like the fact that Emily Mortimer, that she didn't know that her mother was missing, that it had been a while since they'd talked to each other. So there's just like miscommunication from every single one of these characters. And like, in a way that I thought was very genuine. Cause mm-hmm. like, you know, like sometimes you fall out with people you love. And it's because like you end up, no matter how old you get, you'll always be your parent, you'll always be 5 years
always
old to your parent.
Somebody's child, always. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, like, sometimes, you know, it was hard for me to go home after I first left the reservation because I always felt like anytime I came back, I would be the 18-year-old I was when I, yeah. And that was frustrating as a person who has a career, who pays their own bills. This is my room.
I still deal with that.
You know, so do I. And it's like, because, you know, we'll always be a child to them. Mm-hmm. And I had to actually have that conversation with my parents where I was like, I know I'm younger and I know I'm your child, but I'm not a child anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I'm thankful. I mean, I'm lucky enough where, like, my parents, I've been able to have that conversation and be clear with them. Right at the beginning of quarantine, I was down here and I realized I was going to be down here for a little bit with them hanging out. And I just needed to make sure that my dad understood, like, I have other things going on in my life and I, you know, do you not recognize this? And he heard people, but he heard me, you know, and I know some people don't always have the fortune of having that conversation and being heard now, but I'm better than say like one of my brothers who doesn't go to any family function, but he loves my parents, but our relatives, like, you know, if it's like going back is like, they still see you as, you know, this little kid and they've all stayed in the same place. You know, not like any disrespect to some of my cousins, but some of them have, you know, they haven't evolved. And so it's like, they're stuck in this place and they kind of want me to be in that place too. And it's like, you know, and so you're coming back, you think I'm still like, you know, little Drea, little cousin Drea, and you can just walk all over me. Not that you ever fucking could, but you know, it's just, why would I want to put myself in that situation if I don't have to? I don't want to make small talk with people. I don't have anything in common with you.
And I think that's the thing that this movie does really, really well is like show that while family is there for you when you need them, it's also just a very intricate and complicated dynamic. And that like things don't necessarily get resolved through talking. Like some things aren't going to get resolved. You know, like I understand the anger of that grandmother because that's her house. She's lived there her whole life. You know what I mean? That's her property. That's where her man died. And yeah. Like, she doesn't want to go to an assisted living facility.
And now she's being treated like a child.
Yeah.
You know? And she does. And then she says, don't forget, I'm still your mother. I'm still your mother, Kay, you know, after she bites her. But she listens, you know, I would have been like, bitch, I would have snatched my mama up. Like, that's just real. But there is a respect there. There's a respect, you know, she remembers, oh, this is, and then they have that beautiful moment where they hug and she's just like, what is this? Where are we? You know, what's going on? Or she keeps asking these questions over and over again. She doesn't recognize her world. Oh shit. And
got a little passionate there. She's got a little passionate.
And but that reminds me, like, when my grandma she came out here, it was some years ago now. She's passed away since, but she moved out and it was supposed to be just for a trip, and she ended up getting, we discovered she got sick and she ended up on dialysis, and but she had been living by herself in Michigan. And just didn't have a healthy diet, you know, and just wasn't taking care of herself. So once we started feeding her well and treating her, her body just was like, what the fuck? Like, it didn't know what to do. But it was a struggle having to do getting to do things for her because she didn't want us to do anything for her, you know? Mm. And my dad's like, no, this is my damn house. I will take out the garbage in my damn house. And she's like, well, whatever. But it was just like, it was a constant battle until it wasn't. Mm. And one day she just realized she had something good around us. And we were happy to have her too. You know, we all had to get adjusted to one another. And, you know, I probably will be the same way, you know,
You will absolutely be the same way. Oh, 100%. You can't put Drea in a corner. The second one of your kids or grandkids start telling you what to do, that's when you get the belt. I know.
I ain't no belt. They're just going to get thrown out a window.
Damn. They'll be on the first floor, listeners, just FYI. First floor. Just maiming. No killing. That's all. Just maiming.
I mean, I could have had a pallet and then fall on that shit.
But I think that's why this movie is excellent, is because it brought up those feelings, those same feelings for me of like the conflict in a family. And like, you know, when Emily Mortimer actually goes to the assisted living facility in Melbourne to tour it, and you, one of the things I loved about this, and this is a testament to the director, is like there was so much good imagery where she just let the actor do the work. And you can see that like, in touring this, Emily is starting to, or Kay is starting to, she's starting to feel for her mother because she knows what her mother would be giving up. In order to be safe, she would be giving up so much of her independence. And that scene afterwards when she's just in the car bawling, I thought that was so well done and so well rendered and so well told. And that I think quiet moments like that in worse films wouldn't exist, or they would be the first things to go. Like, yeah. I think this is a great movie because it doesn't explain to us what happened at the end. It just let us know that it was a transformation, that it happened to the grandma. Maybe it was starting to happen to Emily Mortimer's character.
Oh, for sure.
But they were all in the bed together. You know, like, I loved that image of Emily at the end where she swaddles her mother up. Well, when she swaddles her up in the blanket and puts her to bed like a child, you know, and then they're all in the bed together. And I think what this movie did well with direction and imagery, or like when she looks at the stained glass door and she realizes that she can't leave her mother, like she can't leave the grandmother, you know, and it's just because that there was that image in the very beginning when we got to the house, and that like, I thought like those like visually really well rendered and also just like gave us so much insight into character development. Like it didn't sacrifice story for character and it didn't sacrifice horror for character. Like we got the scary shit, but we got to see these people as humans and feel for them. I mean, I felt less for the youngest one just because like you said, she was kind of annoying, but that was the point, right? Yeah. She's like she played it well. Yeah. I didn't like that bitch.
And just the same way, like, you know, they didn't give us all the answers at the end. They also didn't give us any, they didn't explain what led them to that in the beginning either. And it's not that, and it's not lacking though. Like they didn't have to explain these things. Mm-hmm. It's the tone of this film presents to you that, you know, there's a great deal of grief going on. Where's, you know, I don't know if they explain where the husband is, you know, like where Kay's husband is. I don't know what happened in that situation. And also the grandmother, like her husband, he's still lingering in the house somewhere and the grief of that. And she hasn't moved on. That's just something I've definitely picked up on big time. The other thing that really kind of brought it together was, but I didn't want to forget, was the makeup department. And there was three people. There was makeup and hair designer Angela Conti, and then there's Tristan Lucas and Danielle Ruth. And Tristan, he actually has like a pretty interesting, he's all over the place, but he was in like, he did Aquaman, Pacific Rim, Alien Covenant, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Okay.
Awesome place.
So tentpole movies.
Yeah. And I'm trying to see Neighbors versus Zombies. Yeah. Oh, he did Hunters. Oh, and he also worked on Preacher, which Preacher was pretty fucking cool. I like Preacher a lot on AMC. And yeah, that really added, because it wasn't a lot of CGI in this film at all, which was really helped a lot. Like our last film, the thing you pointed out, you know, the CGI was probably the one thing I could have done without in Good Manners.
Yeah. That was the only thing I didn't like about that. I'll tell you the only thing I didn't like about this film. I suspect that if you play, the thing is there were, especially upon my second watch, I just couldn't watch it without hearing the fact that almost all of the dialogue is mom, mum, or gran at different pitches. So like mom, mum, mom, 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 gran, gran. You could just do a super cut of them saying mom, mum, or gran. If you did a drinking game where you had to take a shot every time, you would have alcohol poisoning. Yeah, you know. And I just started hearing, I was paying attention to that, you know? And so that kind of fucked me up. Cause in the third act, that's literally all anybody says is mom, mum, or gran.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I thought it was effective, but I was picking up on that big time. Grand. And then the scene where they're trying to escape from the other side of the house, because they incorporated an old house that used to be on the property that I guess
They said there was somebody who was
like some uncle or something like that kind of went crazy there. Yeah,
lost his mind. He died in there. So it was tainted already. And then they incorporated parts of that house, the stained glass windows, into the main house. So he like created like this, not a portal, but it was just like, it created like this almost like a dimension on the other side of the house. It was like it's confusing, but to watch it, it's not that confusing. I still don't understand how she got to the other side. Like, she opens a door and then she's stuck and she can't get back. Mm-hmm. And they did that on purpose, I think, because then all the walls start closing in on her, and that legit like made my skin crawl. Like, that kind of shit scares me.
It's because like that also, that house was dirty as fuck and it was full of fucking mold and shit. And I was like, I would be like, I don't want to breathe that motherfucking air. I don't know what that's doing to my insides right now. But it was really sad because as the youngest one was walking through that part of the house, you see all the notes that what's-her-name had written to remind her, like... What her name is, like what her husband's name is, like who her daughter is. And what was it? You are loved or something like that?
At the very end, the note that makes her come back before she walks out the door and then comes back, and it says, I am loved. And you see that note and then... You know, the scene where she picks up her mother and puts her in a blanket and takes her upstairs, and then proceeds to happen, and then
tearing her skin off.
Well, yeah, and then you know it was, and she was like reborn, and then she sees herself in this person, like that's me, you know, that's gonna be me, and then at the end, you know, she has the spot on her back too, and. They were just accepting, like, it kind of like at the end of the beach house.
Yeah, it wasn't resisting. It was understanding what is inevitable and that having the serenity to not try to change what you can't change.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So relic. And like Australian horror, you know, this, because it has a good story and the conflict is there. And when there's a good, compelling conflict, I'll get on board. Because like I said, I don't like demon houses and I don't like possession shit. But the conflict was so good and the characters were so good that I was like, all right, you know what? I'm going to stick around for this. And it was just like Babadook, where it was like there was a real thing there about having to be a single parent. And like having a monstrous child, and you know how I feel about kids. So like I was there for that movie, but I mean, Australia's killing it.
Yes, they have been killing it. Australia has given us a whole lot of great content over the years, and they keep doing it. So thanks, Australia.
Good eye, mate.
Oh God. Terrible. Oh, we're gonna get canceled for that.
All right, our scream queen this week is Angelica Ross as Donna Chambers and sometimes Nurse Rita in American Horror Story 1984. Now, when I heard, me and Dre watched this together in her apartment last year, towards the end of the year when it was on TV. And I knew that it was about, you know, it was going to be about like some kind of like slashers, 80 slasher throwback. And I love that shit, man. That is my lifeblood, you know? And I was cautiously optimistic. I don't know how you feel about American Horror Story, but there's about two that I've actually liked. So I was like, how is Ryan Murphy going to fuck this one up? Because I liked Coven and I liked Roanoke. I think those were the two that I liked the most.
Roanoke was fun. It was Lady Gaga was hilarious. I'm sure we've said that before on here.
There was like one frame of her. So this was latest season of American Horror Story. It loosely follows the group of camp counselors at Camp Redwood, as they're being stalked and killed one by one by Mr. Jingles. His name is, it's not the name of a cute cat. It's actually his name because you hear him coming because of the jingling of his keys. And initially, Angelica Ross is Nurse Rita. And she's like the camp counselor nurse or whatever. And later on, we find out that she's actually a psychologist, Donna Chambers, who had let Mr. Jingles out of a psychiatric hospital to see him to see him work firsthand, you know? And so initially, she's like an antagonist of the group, and particularly of Brooke, who's played by Emma Roberts. But what I liked about Donna is I think she, in as much as you can get here with one of these Ryan Murphy series, has a character, an actual character arc. You know, there's actually care put into her character, which that's
she's great.
It's extremely rare for a Ryan Murphy project. Because she starts off as an antagonist and she's like, you know, wanting these kids to get killed by Mr. Jingles and like kind of delivers Brooke to him. But then later on, she goes on to sympathize with Brooke and develop a real friendship with her. Brooke gets death penalty because they think she killed all these kids. And Donna saves her by injecting her with something that kind of doesn't kill her. Anyway, the less you think about it, the better. But anyway, then she helps her get sort of revenge and atonement, and Donna's character really looks to be atoned, and they develop an actual friendship, and they recognize each other as final girls in the end, and they kind of, you know, embrace as friends. It wasn't a great, it actually got like, I think 84 on Rotten Tomatoes or something like that. So it was better received than other series of American Horror.
As bad as like the Carnival one or whatever that one was, and then like
I couldn't even finish that one. I finished Asylum. Asylum was all right.
But, I didn't hate it. I mean, it did. It went too far, but I liked a lot of it.
And then Hotel got so corny.
Hotel was really disappointing. Mm-hmm. I was really obsessed. I was ready for that one because that one, that was right around the time when they found, well, it was a few years after, but they a dead girl in a water tank nearby where I live, and
I'm over there, Drea points out that's where the dead girl in the water tank was. And I'm like, I just want to have a margarita, like I don't want to think about dead girl in the water tank. And she's like, you don't know how long she was in there and how much that water was getting. I'm like, I just fucking told you I just want to have a margarita.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you knew though. I just want to make sure if you didn't know that, then you can know. So that's why.
Thank you for educating me.
But they didn't take it as far as they could have because it was roughly based on that place, and they just didn't go where they needed to go with it. It was really stupid. Mm-hmm. And this season was like 5 episodes too long.
You know, because it was like initially it was like camp counselors getting killed, and then it was like, but then is the camp director, is she the killer? And then it was like, was Mr. Jingles set up this whole time?
And then
it was,
and then there's like coming back from the makes a deal with the devil, and what the fuck?
That and then there's motherfucking Dylan McDermott with a porn stash, like, oh, and he's also a killer. And it's like, why does, you know, it's like that fucking Chanel thing, like just take a few things off. We don't need all of that there. And then it's in the future, and then when whatever his name is, Mr. Jingle's son, and then homegirl who played the girl who kept coming back to life in Coven is like the grandmother, and she all, and but then it's like, but then they're all ghosts and they never die and they're confined to this one place. And I was like, you know, it's just a little lot too much.
It's a whole lot.
But the other thing I liked about Donna is that they, you know, they reveal in flashbacks that her father was actually a serial killer. He killed himself right in front of her, and that led her to a lifelong obsession of serial killers, not unlike Eve Pilastri in Killing Eve. Mm-hmm. And she kind of, but she learns her lesson, and I think she learns that she can't understand why her father did what he did.
Yeah.
And that's ultimately why she let Mr. Jingles go. She was like, I want to figure out why. And sometimes you just don't get a why. Like, life doesn't give you whys all the time. And I liked that about her character because I thought it was as subtle as a Ryan Murphy thing could be.
I'm a big fan of Mr. Jingles and John Carroll Lynch. He was also in Zodiac and he's in Gothica. I fucking love Gothica, even though that's like, that was like a really bad experience apparently for Halle Berry and all that. But
wait, what's the story of Gothica?
Oh, because Robert Downey Jr. was on drugs at the time and he was just a fucking mess to be around. And she basically all but said his name on an interview and they were like, would you divulge like some of the worst people you've ever worked with? And she goes, well, and she basically said it was him without saying his name.
Man, did you see that Tandy Newton interview where she was just like,
I read that.
Let me just tell you about Tom Cruise.
Like we didn't know already.
But she was just like, she came to gather these hoes like a braid. Oh, you know what I mean?
Wonderful. And I'm waiting for Mimi, Miss Mariah. Her book's about to drop and she got all kinds of shit to say about people in the industry. Oh man, like so many receipts. They don't
what
know.
What is this? Is this matcha? Is this green? Is this chamomile? What kind of tea are we drinking? What's going on?
I mean, it's steeped and it's delicious and it's going to fuck up a lot of people's lives who deserve to have their lives fucked up because they mess. Like when you read what happened to Tandy and like she was forced to do roles basically, made to, you know, like, and they knew about this shit. You know, they knew she was getting like raped by this director. basically when she was 16. Mm-hmm. And then like, just, it's just nuts. But I'm really happy to like be in a time where, yeah, no more, just no more of that. But, but John Carroll Lynch, you know, like he's kind of like the killer, I guess, in Zodiac. And I really love that last scene where I think it's Jake Gyllenhaal, who actually, who produced Relic, I forgot to mention.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He goes into the hardware store. And after he, because they had met John Carroll Lynch earlier in the film, and then he goes in just because he's pretty sure he knows who did it. And he goes in there and he just looks at him. And then he stares at him and he's like, what is he doing here? And then he just keeps staring at him and he goes, oh. And he has this look in his face like, oh shit, he knows it's me. Mm. And then he just walks out of the store and then that's the end. It's really good.
He looks very tall.
A huge man.
Let me just get on Google, because I would say 6'4".
I would say 6'2", but you're the height whisperer. It could be like a lie, like they could just be filming from like an up angle. He could be 5'2".
6'3". Mm, that's right in between. Out. Yeah, okay, so we both won.
Okay. yeah, he's probably my favorite thing besides Angelica, who again she's really great. All the roles, even when it's a whole lot going on, she's just a lot of fun.
Gorgeous. Yeah. You know, she's a lot of fun to look at. And then she just plays it cool, you know. What about that lunch lady? Do you remember lunch lady? She was like kind of pervy. A little pervy. And she was like, I think when they were having to watch over Richard Ramirez, in the season finale, and she was like, I know you go both ways to Gus Kenworthy, and she's like, are you afraid what might happen if you open this Pandora's box or some shit like that? And I was like, damn, lunch lady, I know what you're serving. You're serving puss.
It's on the menu.
So Angelica Ross, thank you so much for being our screen queen this week. We stand black final girls. We stand black trans final girls. Love you, baby. I'm actually coming at you from my home office. I turned Roy and Jenny's room into an office because I was like, I got my final check from the writer's room and I was like, oh fuck. Like, I'm literally going to be here for at least another year and I don't have to get a roommate. And I was like, why do I treat this place like an Airbnb? And it's because I traveled so much. I was never like decorating anything. Yeah. And so I went and saw I've saved so many of my old flyers and show cards and posters, and I've accumulated all these from other people. And so you can see some like marquees mm-hmm. from when I was at book festivals and some food for thought stuff. And like, there's me and Morgan and like a weird Garfield thing and like another poster for a reading and this prank that I got. And so I've just been decorating.
Great. I'm a big fan. I was going to say, like, we can't have the fridge in the back anymore.
But that's another thing. I just got a shit ton of magnets, too, because I was like, I don't have anything on this fridge. It's so, this place
except is for
so
a big old thing of protein powder.
You know, your man's getting swoles. Your man's getting swoles.
I like it. Okay, little thickums. All right. Catch us next week, same time, same place. We haven't decided what the fuck we want to watch, who our Scream Queen's going to be, but we will keep you in the loop.
Yeah, just stay on our social media. Scream Queen is produced by Alexandra De Palma and Domino Sound.
The theme music by Doc Allison. I'm Drea. I'm ready to fight a motherfucker, Washington. And you can catch me on the gram at Hey Girl Hey. That's HeyGrlHey.
I am Tommy Teebs Pico, and you can find me at Hey Teebs on Instagram because I'm back on Instagram now, HeyTeebs.
See, bitch, I knew you'd be back. And you can find us on Instagram at Scream Queen Podcast.
And online at ScreamQueenPodcast.com.
Send us some love notes at ScreamQueen@gmail.com. That's ScreeEEM Queen@gmail.com.
And in the scary movie of your life,
you better
scream, queen. Listen, we did that on Food for Thought all the time. We have to like, and that's food, the number five. That, it's thought spell how and every, because like, it's impossible to sync on Zoom.
It is. Yeah, you see, I put this as say this in sync. Ha ha ha. Laugh out loud. You're right.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.